Hello, everyone. I'm Lindsay Sizemore, obviously not Caleb Weideman. He couldn't be here. He is a new father, so he's home with his baby. But I did want to recognize one of the other authors, Rindy Murphy, who is in the audience. So I'm going to talk to you today about the use of essence for monitoring our hepatitis C epidemic in Tennessee. So first, we're going to talk about some hepatitis C basics and bring everybody up to speed, then our Tennessee outbreak risk, and then our enhanced surveillance efforts. So first, hepatitis C. Hepatitis C is usually spread via contact with infected blood. It's 10 times more infectious than HIV. HIV is relatively wimpy outside of the body, and hepatitis C is very robust. It can live up to 30 days outside of the body. It can be transmitted by contact with objects that have even small amounts of infected blood on them, unsanitary piercing or tattooing equipment, blood transfusion or organ transplant prior to 1992, hemodialysis, unprotected sex, or vertical transmission. And I wanted to point out that a lot of time when we talk about contact with objects, we all think of syringes, but it can live on anything. It can live on personal equipment like razors, medical equipment, any equipment used to make drugs, so cotton, cookers, snorting straws, even the surface. So very, very, very strong. So if you take 100 people that are infected with hepatitis C, 75 to 85 will develop chronic infection, while about 25 will clear the virus on their own. 60 to 70 will develop chronic liver disease. 5 to 20 will develop cirrhosis. And 1 to 5 will die of cirrhosis or liver cancer. And I did want to point out that it takes over 20 years for cirrhosis to occur, but in the presence of something like HIV or alcohol use, it can happen a lot faster. So now our Tennessee outbreak risk. So with hepatitis C, we're seeing a bimodal distribution. So in the first mode, it's our baby boomers, or those born 1945 to 1965. But the second mode, the more recent mode, is the injection drug users. So those are usually under 30, white, and both male and female. So the graphs displayed on the slide are in reference to that second mode. The graph on the top left represents new cases of acute hepatitis C with respect to urbanicity in the Appalachia region. The light blue bar represents the non-urban settings, while the dark blue bar represents the urban settings. And as evidenced by this graph, we're finding more acute HCV in the non-urban settings. And this trend is growing. And then additionally, on the graph at the bottom, we're seeing an increase in admission to substance abuse treatment centers in persons aged 12 to 29 in the Appalachia region as a result of heroin, and a simultaneous decrease in prescription opioid admission. So over the past several years, we've seen a sharp increase in the number of both acute and chronic hepatitis C in Tennessee, and this increase largely coincides with the nationwide increase in opioid use. One of our largest at-risk populations for hepatitis C are persons who inject drugs. And I'm now going to discuss how this trend in hepatitis C could interact with HIV. So a little bit about HIV and HCV co-infection. According to the CDC, about 25% of HIV-infected persons in the U.S. are also infected with hepatitis C. We're seeing more like 15% in Tennessee. And among persons who inject drugs, the co-infection rate is estimated to be anywhere from 50 to 90%. And HIV and hepatitis C co-infection causes liver damage to progress more rapidly in infected persons, like we mentioned a few minutes ago. So why now? Why are we so concerned with this now? Well, Scott County, Indiana happened and terrified everyone. And also, there's a talk about that going on right now. So if you're in here, you're not in there, but very scary. So Scott County, Indiana is a population of about 4,200 people, 97% white. High unemployment, high poverty, high injection drug use, low education, low insurance enrollment. It's located in southern Indiana, about 30 miles from Louisville, Kentucky, and they historically see about 5 new cases of HIV per year. In late 2014, early 2015, they had an outbreak, and they identified 167 HIV-positive individuals. 86% were co-infected with hepatitis C. Most of that was chronic hepatitis C. 95% were injection drug users. 483 contacts were identified, so that was 8 unique contacts per case. And then some good news, as of 6/4/2015, 74% have insurance and 69% are engaged in care. And the wait time for inpatient detox decreased from 4 to 6 weeks to 12 days. And because I knew I was going to be giving this talk, I checked this morning, and the number is actually up from 167 HIV positive to 191. And that's because they did additional events targeting the high-risk negatives. Also, Tennessee is very much at risk. So I'm sure many of you have seen this, but for those of you who haven't, in the fall, CDC did a vulnerability index where they looked at demographic and socioeconomic factors that would make a county more likely to be the next Scott County, Indiana. And of the 220 counties they identified, Tennessee had 41, which was roughly 20% of our population. And these counties are primarily located in eastern Tennessee. Thankfully, even though we're having this opioid epidemic, at this point we're not seeing much overlap between hepatitis C and HIV. Hepatitis C is concentrated in the eastern corridor of our state, while HIV tends to be concentrated in the metros. But even though our HIV cases have been decreasing the last 5 years, and we only see about 2 to 5% that identify as injection drug users each year, we are at risk, and we do realize that injection drug use behavior is self-reported, so it's probably a lot more higher than that. So this is looking at confirmed cases only of acute hepatitis C in Tennessee. CDC actually estimates that this is 1/13 of the actual number, and even with this huge underrepresentation, we're constantly in the top 5. I know in 2013 it says we're in 6th place, but we're working on those numbers because we don't think they're quite accurate, so we're probably going to go up in 2013. And again, concentrated in the eastern region of the state. And this map depicts the drug trafficking corridor in Tennessee, and the blue represents the high-intensity drug trafficking areas, which are, again, in eastern Tennessee, so we are seeing a theme on every single map. And as I mentioned before, we don't see a lot of HIV from needle sharing, but as we learned from Scott County, Indiana, it just takes one, and you have a huge problem. So, because we're looking at emerging risk groups and areas that we didn't previously think of at risk for HIV, we needed to shift our thinking to outbreak detection. So as I mentioned, the number of those living with HIV is decreasing, but our risk of an outbreak is increasing due to the opioid epidemic. So we need to plan, prepare, and have early detection since we are vulnerable, and we need to enhance our surveillance efforts and increase testing. I'm not going to talk a lot today about increasing testing efforts, but I will talk about enhanced surveillance. So we asked ourselves, how can we enhance surveillance? So the first thing we wanted to do was simplify and streamline existing efforts. In Tennessee, hepatitis C surveillance has been conducted for many years, but not routinely or in a streamlined way. So we created a user guide that highlights exactly how we want all of our hepatitis surveillance to be conducted. And then we went out into the regions at the beginning of this year. We have 13 public health regions and gave a training explaining this user guide. And then we wanted to expand what's being done. So we developed a pilot project that targets the high-risk hepatitis C populations who otherwise would have been classified as chronic, because as we all know, that's a limitation of lab-based reporting. You're not getting your risk factor, or you're not getting any of your signs and symptoms, or sometimes you don't even get your elevated ALT. So a lot of them are being classified as chronic. We reached out to the provider to obtain additional lab information as well as signs and symptoms, and then we reached out to the patient to determine risk factor and to provide prevention messaging to them. And since only acute hepatitis C is reportable in Tennessee, we started conducting chronic hepatitis C centrally, which, as I'm sure you can imagine, is a lot of work. And then since hepatitis C is a huge epidemic, we realized we needed to do something that provides scalable and reproducible situational awareness, so ESSENCE. And I won't go into what the acronym stands for, but it was developed by Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. And the goal of ESSENCE is to discover epidemics and similar health concerns before they get out of control. And we implemented this in the viral hepatitis section in September of 2015. So how this works is we extract hepatitis C data from the NEDSpace system in CSV format, and we transfer it to Essence by secure file transfer using daily SAS program. And then we constructed a MyEssence dashboard for acute hepatitis C. And here's what that dashboard looks like, and I know it's kind of hard to see, but it includes daily and weekly temporal cluster analyses using traditional algorithms for aberration detection. So at the top, we have our query. The two things at the top are our query by both daily and weekly. And we realize we'll be more likely to observe a cluster in the weekly query. And on the bottom left, we have the query for statewide. And on the bottom right, we have the query for Eastern Tennessee, which has all the eastern regions that house the 24 counties that are at the most at risk. And we pull in confirmed and probable, as well as only closed investigations. When we first got Essence, we were really excited and we pulled in everything, but it was really, really overwhelming because every minute of every day we had an aberration, it seemed, and a lot of the cases opened as acute were actually chronic, and so we were going down all these rabbit holes and wasting a lot of time. So we said, okay, we're going to wait till they're closed and we have all the information that we need. So, luckily, there is no aberration in the screenshot. I took this the other day. But if there was, yellow means warning and red means an alert. And so what we basically do is we look at this every day. And if we see an aberration, we click on the dot, and it automatically pulls up a line listing of the patients, de-identified, obviously. And we look to see if proper condition was applied, so acute, and then case status, probable, confirmed, not a case. And we see if this was applied based on the 2016 CDC CSTE case definition. And then we examine the risk factor information to rule out healthcare-associated infection by looking to see if hep C acquisition cannot be explained by any other risk factor. And then when we find unusual aberrations, we examine HIV status and possibly send it back out to the regions to do further field investigating and contact tracing and prevention messaging. So one example was someone had noted in their notes that they were in a drug sharing community of 40 people. So clearly we called that region and had them go back out and investigate and do contact tracing and prevention messaging. It ended up not turning into anything, thank goodness, but that's kind of how you can use this. And then this is the spatial cluster analysis using zip code. So zip code level includes counties surrounding Tennessee on the map because we border 8 states. But we don't capture that data. And then we can visualize geography, but spatial aberration is not implemented yet. And one thing I think is really cool is you can download this map. So if you were having an outbreak, you could download this map every day, and it could assist with your report outs and that kind of thing. And then another thing is Dr. Michael Rickles, the epidemiologist in the program, and I, we do a lot of QAing. And one of the things we QA is to see when investigations have been open longer than 30 days. Because we held phone calls with the regions, and they thought that was a reasonable amount of time to get all the information. And so this allows us to see what's going on in each region every day. So how has Essence benefited our HCV surveillance? Its ability to investigate aberrations allowed staff to easily describe clusters of cases and quickly determine if we needed to do additional follow-up. It allowed us to do visualization and basic demographic information, and it was accessible in one application, and allowed real-time sharing information with public health staff throughout the Tennessee Department of Health. The epidemiologist in the program and I can create additional queries whenever we need to and easily share these with each other or other programs. And then it allows us to QA a subset of information being entered by the regions. And since we did those trainings at the beginning of the year, it allows us to make sure that what we were training and what we were speaking to is actually being done. And since its implementation in September 2015, we've had 4 aberrations or 9 patients that were detected and investigated by the HAI program because we couldn't rule out that it was an HAI-related infection. Thank goodness it wasn't. And then we had 54 further field investigated by the regional staff due to outbreak potential. And thankfully, no outbreaks have been identified. So acknowledgments, John Hopkins University for creating Essence, viral hepatitis, so Dr. Michael Rickles, the epidemiologist, and Carolyn Wester, our fearless leader, the HIV section, Dr. Chanel McGoy, syndromic surveillance, Caleb and Dr. Wendy Murphy, and then surveillance systems and informatics, Aaron Holtcoin. There. Thank you. How long were you holding that up? I didn't even see you holding that.
So, about 5 minutes for questions. Please use the microphone. The session is being recorded. Any questions for our presenters? Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. Good job. And I think, can we give her one more round of applause for stepping in on
He was joking. He was going to steal my notes, and I told him I would stop.
I'm Lei Zhang from the Southern Nevada Health District. From your data set, you said you only count the closed after investigation complete. Is that from Essence or from your MBS system?
From MBS.
So basically, the data source is not from MBS. You just use Essence, the dashboard, and the GIS to do the outbreak indicators. Is that right?
I'm going to defer to, because I see her.
Yeah. Yeah, so
the data has to go onto our Essence server, so it comes out of our MBS system and goes to the Essence server every day. Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Sarah Kimball from Chicago Department of Public Health. Sounds like you're really trying to track HCV data in real time, which is very exciting and interesting. I wonder, though, from my experience in Chicago, you must have variable completeness of data from different regions within Tennessee. How does that impact the way you're able to visualize data, and how do you deal with that? I know in Chicago we're overwhelmed by case reports and often have very limited risk factor data in what we send on to the state.
So in Tennessee, only acute hepatitis C is reportable, acute B and C. And so it's not really a ton, we don't see a ton of acute just based on, you know, the lab-based reporting, and we don't get all the information. And so they're really pretty complete. They weren't before we did the in-person trainings, but now because we've said we need this information or we're going to call you, they do it. And if they don't, then we do call them and say, hey, we need you to tell us this risk factor information. But sometimes the patient won't give it, and you can't make them. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we're seeing an increase, I believe, in acute B and C, just because they have more time to follow up on everything.
I guess my question, I'm Sita Smith from Massachusetts. My question is, when you're looking at trends, you would tend to need a baseline, I guess, based on historical data. Where did you get that data from, and how many years back did you go?
So Essence actually does that for us. So it's a different one for weekly than it is for daily. Daily is just the default. Essence one, I don't know much about it. But the weekly one, I think it goes back, is it 3 years?
So it's like a rolling
baseline. Right. Because otherwise we would have aberrations constantly, because we're just doing more now.
Well, we're new to this, so I'm trying to pick up technical tips.
I think that for relatively small number events, you know, in the 10 and under per day, the kind of baseline algorithm of if this different than last year's volume of cases isn't as these are not questionable cases. These are case lab confirmed cases, so it's, the numbers are much smaller.
What date do you use?
Event date, which is another thing because it's changing constantly. If you get more information, then it'll change, and that's been something we've run into, but that's the best date we could think to use.
Hi, I'm Mary. I'm Chicago Department of Public Health. I'm just curious, how do you extract the data from your net-based system and upload it to Essence? I imagine you automate.
Well, I'm just a viral hepatitis. I use it. I wasn't involved in the implementation, so Randy again.
So it is an automated process. So we extract from our reporting database a CSV file that goes through SFTP to Essence. Well, it goes through Rhapsody on its way, but.
So are people in the room familiar with Orion Health's Rhapsody interoperability engine? So it's a tool that every state except for one in the country owns, and it's.
You can stand here. Like, I'll move out of the way.
So I'm happy to hear you using Rhapsody, because that interoperability engine, which can connect systems in your organization, it's a enterprise-grade piece of software that most hospitals purchase to connect their billing system to their lab system to their EHR system. The CDC, thank you very much, your CDC colleagues purchased this for every state in the country, and 49 of states took advantage of it. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but the state that didn't is using an open source tool that's the equivalent. So that process, and my question relates to this question is, you've done this now for hepatitis C. Did you do this in a way using enterprise integration engine tools so that you can repeat the same process with much less work for other diseases?
Yeah, we do it for hepatitis B too. So we built it for C, and then all we had to do was change the condition.
So actually all of our reportable conditions go to Essence daily. So anyone that wants to conduct this type of surveillance, sort of more intense, enhanced surveillance for their reportable, you know, disease, their pet disease, can do that. So we just installed Essence in September of last year, so it was very timely for the HIV-HCV threat, and so we're sort of slowly making sure that all of our programs can learn to use Essence for their pet disease.
One more question?
I was actually going to ask if you guys do it for Hep B, so that's part of my question. My other question, I'm Jennifer Roth from Florida Department of Health. My other question is, you said you close cases within about 30 days. Is that like a standard time that you've set for your field staff to close them in? So you're looking basically a month, you know, the data you're getting, you can be assured is about a month behind?
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And one thing I did want to mention too, sorry, is we're also developing an outbreak response plan, because I think it's important that if you see these aberrations, you have to have a plan for what you're going to do, because what good is it to say, oh, it's warning me, that's it, that's enough. Like, you need to you need to have a plan.
Hi, I'm Lauren Stockman in the Hep C program in Wisconsin. Thanks for the information. I'm wondering if we might be able to use Essence for not just the acute cases. We have about less than 50 a year, and I'm not sure that would be enough to show a signal in our state. What do you think about using the criteria, or are you able to set the criteria for other demographics if we wanted to look at the cases under 30 or anything like that, if you have any comments on using that strategy?
Mm-hmm, definitely. You would just modify it in the query wizard. We knew we were only going to be looking at acute, and so that's why we just said give us everything. But in the event that we were to start looking at chronic, we would look at the under 30, because, you know, I would want to look those up and make sure that they're actually chronic and that they're not acute, just based on limitation of information.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.